When was it moved there?
The program was set up in 2008. To this provisional site, they've transported 150 tons of scrap metal.
What happened to the scrap when it gets there? When they bring it there, then they put it in the ground. What do they do with the scrap?
They dig and they put it in holes in the ground. They simply take it from one place to another. Obviously, it's in the desert. But according to our information, there are water tables below. Scientific reports say it's potentially dangerous for the water.
I do my utmost to get to Hafr al-Batin. I need an authorization and an escort. General Jabbar promises to help. But then a counter-order arrives from Baghdad. The affair is beyond his authority, and only a minister can give me the required permission. I know Iraq too well. It will never happen.
One of the things you learn as a child is clean up your own mess. Don't expect somebody else to come in here and pick up your crayons and your toys. So we did this war of choice, and my view is that we have a responsibility for the mess we leave. We can't walk away and just say, well, we don't care.
The depleted uranium question, like any question involving armies, weapons and wars, suffers from a lack of transparency, from a lack of precise democratic control on both national and European levels. I think the priority is to continue the fight on the UN level, which is very useful, and also within the European Union, so that we can obtain a moratorium on depleted uranium munitions.
Countries that have used depleted uranium weapons quite obviously are not interested in being raked over the coals for a weapon system they feel they have a right to use and which they feel is not dangerous. But we will see. The international community doesn't stand still on these kinds of things. And I think that if there's an increasing effort to say, look, here are the damages, and you have to have something concrete, and you have to say that this is more than a supposition, and that we have done some research, and unfortunately you have to bring examples of where beyond the pure use of depleted uranium as a tank buster, you have created a special kind of damage to the individuals beyond what normally conventional weapons create, then I think you have a basis for moving ahead.
Depleted uranium munitions were invented in the 1970s to combat Moscow's armored divisions. The Soviet enemy has disappeared, but this all-powerful arsenal has remained. Those responsible for authorizing its use will one day have to be accountable to the victims and explain why they turned a deaf ear to every appeal for caution.
The most brave people are the people who've never been to war. The ones who think war is such a great deal and want to go to the parades and stand there and see the flags go by near the bands. They haven't been anywhere near what it's like when they come.
And that's it for this week's episode. And don't forget to share your thoughts and comments with us. Until next week and another Aperture. Goodbye.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. in the limelight.
Since Nancy Pelosi, the former Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, visited Taiwan, the tension in this southern Chinese island has doubled. Also, the U.S. Department of State has increased arms sales to Taiwan worth billions of dollars. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website of NHK has covered this story and tells us more. China has ordered sanctions against two American organizations for hosting Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen during a recent trip to the United States. China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced on Friday, 7th of April, that the Washington-headquartered think tank Hudson Institute and the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in California would be banned from any cooperation, exchange or transaction with institutions and individuals in China. The Ronald Reagan Presidential Library was the site of meeting between Tsai Ing-wen and U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy on Wednesday, 5th of April. It was the first time a Taiwanese president had met a U.S. Speaker of the House on American soil. China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs added that the key leaders of the two American organizations would also be barred from visiting China, unable to transact or cooperate with organizations or individuals in China, and have any assets in the country frozen. Several leading executives from the two entities, including the Hudson Institute official Sarah May Stern and John Walters, and Joanne Drake of the Reagan Presidential Library, were included in the sanctions alongside Taiwan's representative in America, He Xiao Bi-him. The Chinese Foreign Ministry noted, "The Hudson Institute and the Reagan Presidential Library have provided a platform and facilitated Tsai Ing-wen's separatist activities, which seriously undermine China's sovereignty and territorial integrity." Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen's visit to the United States took place despite China's stern warnings against it. China has sovereignty over Taiwan under the One China Principle. The United States recognizes that sovereignty, but regularly violates its own stated policy. The island has become a major bone of contention between Beijing and Washington. Speaking in Washington on Thursday, 6th of April, the State Department spokesman acknowledged differences between the United States and China over Taiwan, but claimed the two powers have managed the situation for 40 years. The United States characterizes Tsai Ing-wen's visit as a transit on her way to and from Latin America. During her meeting with the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, Tsai Ing-wen thanked Washington for its commitment to purportedly protecting Taiwan's way of life, while the U.S. officials stressed the importance of relations between Washington and Taipei. Taiwan has been the de facto independent since 1949, when, losing side in the Chinese Civil War, fled to the island and established its own administration. While only a handful of nations worldwide have recognized Taiwan as a sovereign state, the United States has long maintained close and unofficial ties with Taiwan. Tsai Ing-wen returned to Chinese Taipei on Friday, 7th of April, and said her government would not cease having exchanges with the world despite impediments. She said, "We have shown to the international community that when faced with pressure and threats, Taiwan will be even more united. We will never succumb to suppression, and we will also never cease having exchanges with the international community because of impediments." Meanwhile, the few countries that still maintain diplomatic relations with Taiwan are rapidly shifting towards China. Latin American leader Xiomara Castro recently announced Honduras' decision to cut ties with Taiwan to establish diplomatic ties with China, dealing a fresh blow to the island's U.S.-backed secessionist leader Tsai Ing-wen. Honduras was among about a dozen small countries in Latin America and the Pacific Ocean that diplomatically recognized Chinese Taipei over Beijing. The English website of Al Jazeera Television Network has also covered this story and tells us more. Taiwanese officials said on Friday, 7th of April, that China has deployed warships and aircraft near Taiwan for a second day, as tensions mount between Beijing and the self-ruled island over a meeting between President Tsai Ing-wen and the U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Chinese Taipei's defense ministry said in a statement, three Chinese warships transited in waters surrounding the island territory on Friday, while a Chinese fighter jet and an anti-submarine helicopter also crossed Taiwan's air defense identification zone. China's Shandong aircraft carrier sailed through Taiwan's southeastern waters on its way to the Western Pacific on Wednesday, 5th of April, just hours prior to a meeting in Los Angeles, California, between Tsai Ing-wen and Kevin McCarthy. Beijing had repeatedly warned against the meeting in recent weeks and issued yet another stark rebuke on Thursday, 6th of April. China's foreign ministry spokesperson Mao Ning said China firmly opposes and strongly condemns the act in response to the seriously erroneous act of collusion between the United States and Taiwan. China will take resolute and effective measures to safeguard national sovereignty and territorial integrity. Kevin McCarthy, who is second in line for the U.S. presidency, had initially planned to go to Taiwan himself, but later chose to meet Tsai Ing-wen in California. Last August, China deployed warships, fighter jets and missiles into waters and airspace around Taiwan for its largest show of force in years, following a visit to the island by Kevin McCarthy's predecessor, Nancy Pelosi. A senior U.S. legislator said recently he was doing everything possible to speed up the delivery of weapons to Taipei, further implying that other countries that possessed the arms could sell them to the self-ruled island with U.S. government permission. The website of dailymotion.com has also covered this story. Beijing has reiterated its sovereignty over Taiwan, saying no individual force can hold China back from achieving the goal of national reunification. China's foreign ministry spokesman Mao Ning said at a press briefing in Beijing recently that Beijing is firmly opposed to any form of official interaction between the United States and Taiwan. Mao Ning said, China firmly opposes any form of official interaction between the United States and Taiwan. We firmly oppose any visit by the leader of the Taiwan region to the United States in any name or under whatever pretext. And we firmly oppose the U.S. government having any form of contact with Taiwan authorities. Mao Ning said, Tsai Ing-wen's so-called stopover was actually part of a separatist attempt. The spokeswoman for the Chinese Foreign Ministry said, it has been proven again that the reported trip was not so much a transit, but an attempt to seek breakthroughs and propagate Taiwan's secessionism. I want to emphasize that whatever the Taiwan authorities say and do, they cannot change the basic fact that Taiwan is part of China's territory. No individual force can stop China from achieving national reunification. Meanwhile, senior Chinese diplomat Wang Yi called on the United States to implement the high-level consensus reached by the two heads of state last year. Wang Yi made remarks in a meeting with the president of the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations in Beijing. Washington continues to antagonize Beijing by siding with Taipei's secessionist administration, engaging in frequent military missions around the island, and serving as its largest weapons supplier.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo Jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Finland has officially joined the US-led NATO despite repeated warnings from Russia, which vowed countermeasures and plans to bolster its military capacity in its western and northwestern regions near the border with the Nordic country if the alliance deploys any additional troops or equipment to its new member. At the headquarters of the NATO in Brussels, a ceremony was held on Tuesday, during which NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, Finnish Foreign Minister Pekka Haavisto, and the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken completed the final formalities of Finland's accession to the U.S.-led transatlantic military alliance in front of the media. Separately, Finland's President Sauli Niinisto also confirmed his country's membership in a statement. He said Finland has today become a member of the defense alliance NATO. The era of military non-alignment in our history has come to an end. A new era begins. Niinisto added, each country maximizes its own security, so does Finland. At the same time, NATO membership strengthens our international position and room for maneuver. As a partner, we have long actively participated in NATO activities. In the future, Finland will make a contribution to NATO's collective deterrence and defense. In an apparent reference to Russia's deep concerns regarding NATO's expansion, the Finnish president stressed that Finland's membership is not targeted against anyone, nor does it change the foundations or objectives of Finland's foreign and security policy. He described Finland as a stable and predictable Nordic country that seeks peaceful resolution of disputes. Russia's reaction to the new membership was strong, as the Kremlin warned that Finland's NATO membership would force Moscow to take countermeasures. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, "The Kremlin believes that this is another aggravation of the situation. The NATO expansion is an encroachment on our security, the interests of the Russian Federation. This is exactly how we perceive it. We will take countermeasures to ensure our own tactical and strategic security." He also stressed that the countermeasures that Moscow deems necessary would be taken, adding that the Russian armed forces would report on their response to NATO actions in the Nordic country. Finland's accession to NATO adds one of Western Europe's most potent wartime militaries to the US-led military alliance, as well as the Nordic countries' intelligence and border surveillance abilities. Helsinki brings with it a well-equipped and trained active armed force of about 30,000. It can also call on 250,000 reserves. Finland's accession also doubles the length of NATO's border with Russia. The membership would guarantee the country's access to the resources of the entire alliance in the event of attack. Russian President Vladimir Putin has on several occasions cited the post-Soviet expansion of NATO eastward toward Russia's borders as a reason for the military operation he declared in Ukraine on February 24, 2022. Key to a list of Russian demands from the West prior to the war was a guarantee that Kyiv would never be part of NATO. Fearing that they might be targeted after Russia invaded Ukraine a year ago, Finland and Sweden applied last year to join the US-led transatlantic Atlantic Military Pact in April 2022, the Kremlin warned that it would deploy nuclear weapons in the Baltic Sea region if the two European states joined the 30-member military alliance. All 30 allies signed Finland's and Sweden's accession protocols. Turkey and Hungary delayed the process for months but have agreed on Finland. Ankara has sought guarantees and assurances from the two Nordic states, notably on tackling what it calls extremism. Hungary's demands have never been explicit. Moscow says the latest expansion of the bloc has greatly damaged the security situation in the whole of the North Europe, which for decades used to be one of the most stable regions in the world. Apart from that, Russian diplomats asserted that Helsinki's move has done harm to Finland's own international stance. By joining NATO, Finland has given up on its unique identity and lost its independence, forfeiting this special status in international affairs stemming from its decades-long policy of non-alignment. Moscow says Finland became a minor NATO member without the possibility to influence any decisions. It has lost its ability to have a say in international affairs.
Iran and Saudi Arabia have taken a giant step toward closer cooperation. The foreign ministers of Iran and Saudi Arabia have held a meeting in the Chinese capital, Beijing, to give a boost to Riyadh-Tehran rapprochement efforts. Prince Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud and Hossein Amir Abdullahian met for the first time since the two countries signed a China-brokered deal on the resumption of relations back in May. The two foreign ministers signed a joint statement regarding their bilateral ties. The statement says that Iran and Saudi Arabia will move toward restoring full ties. Consulate generals will also issue visas to nationals from the two countries, and the kingdom will ease the process for Umrah and Hajj pilgrimages. Riyadh and Tehran have also agreed to improve security and economic cooperation. Two sides also agreed to develop cooperation in any field that can ensure the security and stability of the region, as well as the interests of its nations. Furthermore, Amir Abdullahian and Faisal bin Farhan underscored the importance of dialogue on ways to bolster bilateral relations and activate a security cooperation agreement.
We saw very positive talks, very constructive negotiations between the two sides. Accordingly, the two sides stressed that, actually they said that they have consensus on that, and they said that from today they resume their official ties. From today, then they decided to exchange some delegations between the two countries in the as soon as possible, and we will see that in the coming days. Actually, such developments will take place. Actually, technical teams will be present, will visit the capitals of both countries, and more talks will be held, and the embassies of both countries will be reopened soon.
As well as a general cooperation deal in the fields of economy, trade, investment, technology, science, culture, sports, and youth. Given the existing natural resources and economic capabilities that can be used to ensure the common interests of the two brotherly nations, the two sides agreed to increase meetings and consultations to further realize the positive prospects in bilateral relations.
Now, the restoration of diplomatic relations, how quickly in your mind do you think we're going to see Saudi Arabia making significant investments and vice versa?
I would say very quickly when people really stick to the principles of what was agreed. I think that that could happen very quickly. Our aim, and I think this has been made very clear previously even by our leadership, is to have a region that is stable, that is able to provide for its people and prosper. And there is no reason for that not to happen. I mean, Iran is our neighbor and have been and will continue to be for hundreds of years.
On March 10, after several days of intensive negotiations hosted by China, Iran, and Saudi Arabia, they agreed to resume their diplomatic relations and reopen their embassies and diplomatic missions after 7 years of estrangement. That agreement followed intensive negotiations between the secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, and his Saudi counterpart in Beijing. The statement was inked by Shamkhani, Musaid al-Eban, Saudi Arabia's national security advisor, and Wang Yi, the director of the Office of the Central Foreign Affairs Commission of the Chinese Communist Party. Saudi Arabia severed diplomatic relations with Iran back in January 2016. Tension-easing talks between Iran and Saudi Arabia kick-started in April 2021 and gradually gathered momentum after the Raisi-led cabinet assumed a charge later that year.
Since day one, after winning the election, the Iranian president stressed that he means to improve foreign trade, especially with the neighboring states. So improving neighborly ties has been a major agenda for President Raisi's government. And this is not possible unless you de-escalate the tensions with Saudi Arabia. That's why in his first press conference, even before his inauguration, he said that he was ready to reopen embassies in Tehran and Riyadh on the same day.
The talks on the resumption of ties between the two neighbors dealt a heavy blow to the Israeli premier Benjamin Netanyahu's project to continue the so-called normalizations, destabilize the region, and form a regional alliance against Iran.
Israel has been working on its own to try to normalize relations with Saudi Arabia. So the fact that Saudi Arabia is now getting closer to Iran could raise some real problems for Israel's efforts to normalize its own relationships with the Sunni Arab states in the Persian Gulf. So we are looking to see what exactly some of those ramifications are going to be, but clearly a whole lot more chips still to fall here.
Shamkhani's successful trips to China, which was followed by trips to the UAE and Iraq, sent Iran's enemies into a fizzy, as they feared they would prove to be a game-changer in the region.
As a good friend and good partner of the Middle East countries, China will continue to respect the autonomy of the Middle East countries and is a force supporting reconciliation, peace, and harmony in the Middle East. China will work with Middle Eastern countries to implement global security initiatives, global development initiatives, and global civilization initiatives to promote security, stability, development, prosperity, tolerance, and harmony in the Middle East.
The restoration of ties between the two countries comes amid major shifts in the power dynamic of the region. Furthermore, China's role in the breakthrough shook up dynamics in West Asia, where the U.S. has for decades been the main mediator.
China plays a very important role in the process of reconciliation in the Middle East region. Saudi Arabia and Iran achieved reconciliation in bilateral relations under the mediation of China and Beijing and are further advancing the process of reconciliation. It proves that both sides felt comfortable in Beijing. As we know, China has always upheld fairness and justice in promoting peace talks. It has neither taken any side nor been partial in mediation. Therefore, concerning issues related to Saudi-Iran relations, China has always emphasized the common points in the interest of the two countries and then promoted peace talks, accommodated the concerns of all parties, and provided great comfort for the two countries.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said that upcoming elections should be a lesson to the U.S. and that from now on, doors are closed to U.S. Ambassador Jeffrey Flake, who last week met with Erdogan's main electoral rival, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu. He said, "We need to teach America a lesson in these elections." Joe Biden speaks from there. What is Biden's ambassador doing here? He goes to visit Mr. Kemal. It's a shame. Use your brain. You are the ambassador. Your interlocutor here is the president. He added, "Our doors are now closed to him. You cannot see me anymore. Why? You will know your limits." According to a tweet from the U.S. Embassy, Flake met with Kılıçdaroğlu, the leader of the Republican People's Party, on 29th of March as part of continuing conversations with Turkish political parties on issues of mutual interest between the two countries. Also in early March, Ankara summoned Flake over top U.S. General Mark Milley's visit to northeast Syria. This happened weeks after Turkish Interior Minister slammed the U.S. envoy after Washington warned Ankara Ankara about exporting chemicals, microchips and other products to Russia. Erdogan is fuming over the U.S. envoy's meeting with opposition candidate Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, who is leading most polls weeks before crucial elections. According to the most recent opinion polls released on March 27th, Kılıçdaroğlu is ahead of Erdogan in voter intention by 2.5 percentage points. These figures show Erdogan has been able to close the gap from earlier in the month when he was lagging by more than 10 percentage points. Four different polling agencies suggest a possible seat change at the presidential palace in Ankara, with Kılıçdaroğlu leading the race with more than 50% of voters' support. In contrast, support for Erdogan stands at 44% on average. Presidential and parliamentary elections in Turkey are scheduled for May 14th. Kılıçdaroğlu was nominated as the presidential candidate by an alliance of the country's six opposition parties. Erdogan and his ruling AK Party are expected to face an uphill battle for re-election following the devastating earthquake that killed over 50,000 people in the country in the early February. The US and Turkey, allies and strategic partners on paper, haven't had an easy relationship since 2014 when Washington decided to ally against ISIS with Kurdish militants in Syria, which are viewed as terrorists by Ankara. Since then, two more US administrations have taken power in Washington. Yet, tensions and occasional shouting matches over a set of issues from Turkey's purchase of Russian-made S-400 air defense systems to Ankara's decision to hold up Sweden's NATO bid have continued. After Ankara made the decision to buy Russian S-400 missile defense systems, the U.S. kicked Turkey off a stealth F-35 fighter jet program. So when Sweden and Finland declared their NATO accession bid, it provided Erdogan with a trump card in his hardball games with Turkey's Western allies. And let's not forget the allegations of U.S. involvement in the attempted coup against Erdogan's government in 2016. These have all fueled an anti-American sentiment in Ankara that views the U.S. as an unreliable ally. In addition, Turkish media has reported that Erdogan might host Russian President Vladimir Putin in the near future for the inauguration of a nuclear power plant. Erdogan has said his country is determined to proceed with the nuclear power plant project despite objection from the opposition. He noted that Putin may either travel to Mersin in person or attend via teleconference. The recent moves to condemn the U.S., give a cold shoulder to the U.S. ambassador, and to embrace Putin might be part of a process of heating up tensions with the U.S. before elections in May.
The regime has carried out yet another airstrike in Syria, this time targeting positions in the western city of Homs. A war monitoring group said explosions rocked the city and fire broke out in a research center. The Syrian military said the country's air defense intercepted several missiles, but the strike injured several soldiers and caused some material damage. The Sunday strike near the city of Homs was Israel's third such attack since last week. The regime carried out two separate attacks near the capital Damascus on Thursday and Friday. Syria was soon to react. In a statement, the Syrian foreign ministry slammed what it called fascist Israeli military attacks, saying the regime is in close coordination with terrorist groups to prolong the crisis in the Arab country. Iran's Revolution Guards Corps, which lost two of its members in Friday's attack, warned Israel of a crushing response. In a statement, the IRGC said, quote, "The crimes of the fake and criminal Zionist Israeli regime will not go unanswered, and it will pay." Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani condemned the attack, saying the blood of the high-ranking martyrs will not go waste, and that Tehran reserves its right to respond at the appropriate time and place. This comes as the regime in Tel Aviv argues that it carries out attacks in Syria to prevent Iran's growing presence. Syria, however, says military cooperation and arms program with Iran are part of a decades-old strategic partnership to withstand Israel's long-term threats. Iran says its officers serve as an advisory role in Syria at the invitation of Damascus. Syria has sent numerous letters to the United Nations calling on the world body to intervene and put an end to Israeli attacks, but almost all those calls have fallen on deaf ears. The international community has failed to even blame the Israeli regime for the losses inflicted on Damascus. The latest Israeli airstrikes in Syria's homes is the regime's seventh such attack in March, which is an indication that the regime has been raising the number of its aggressions against Syria. But why is the regime increasing the number of its attacks? First and foremost, what seems to be the case is the fact that the Arab world is increasing its engagement with the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. From Egypt to Saudi Arabia, each country has its own reason to resume relations with Damascus. Egypt has set up contacts with Assad, with both sides having agreed to strengthen cooperation during their first official visit by a Syrian foreign minister to Cairo, which is unprecedented in over a decade. According to Egyptian sources, the visit was aimed at putting in place steps for Syria's return to the Arab League through Egyptian and Saudi mediation. Meanwhile, Riyadh and Damascus have reached an agreement to reopen their embassies after the Muslims' holy month of Ramadan. Saudi Arabia says it is planning to invite Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to an Arab League summit that Riyadh is hosting in May. Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan is set to travel to Damascus soon to hand President Assad a formal invitation to attend the summit scheduled for May 19. From a different perspective, Israel sees its existence in tatters ever since Iran and Saudi Arabia decided to normalize ties. That could significantly be one of the most reasons behind an increase in the number of attacks against Syria. All in all, what seems to be of high significance is that Israel and its longtime ally, the United States, see no other option but to weaken the government in Damascus by any means, be it by pounding Syria with missiles and rockets or maintaining presence in the Arab country to plunder the country's oil riches. All can be considered as the West's attempts to keep Damascus in isolation, something which has so far proven to be otherwise.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion on the blessed month of Ramadan. Month of Ramadan, among other months of the year, is like prayer times among other times of the day. It appears that the month of Ramadan, among other months of the year, is like prayer times among other times of the day. That is to say, Holy Sharia has provided opportunities in the form of prayers for people who are restricted by material factors. The five daily prayer times are like an alarm. They provide us with a kind of privacy in order to illuminate our hearts and souls. Daily prayers have been made obligatory in order to prevent us from being submerged in the material world. They provide us with the opportunity to step out of the material world, think about spirituality, and not be submerged in the material world. It appears that the month of Ramadan has the same characteristic among other months of the year. It provides the human soul with an opportunity to break free. The month of Ramadan is an opportunity for our souls to be purified of material factors that surround us. It provides an opportunity for our souls to become illuminated.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
One of the great achievements of the month of Ramadan is repentance and returning to Allah the Exalted. In the holy dua of Abu Hamza al-Thumali, we read, "Let us gather around Mustafa and achieve the position of returning to you." We ask to help us achieve the position of repentance so that we can return to him and return from deviant, bad and indecent actions, thoughts and conducts. In the farewell dua of the auspicious month of Ramadan, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says to the God of the world, "You are one who opened a door for your servants so that they can return to you, and you name this door repentance." This is Sahifat al-Sajjadiyya, dua number 45. He says to God that he opened this door for us so that we rush towards his forgiveness and benefit from the blessing of his forgiveness and mercy. This door is the door of repentance. It is a window to the pure view of divine forgiveness. The month of Ramadan enlightens and cleanses hearts and souls by fasting, engaging in dhikr, dua, and divine prayers. By reciting the Holy Quran and engaging in many other virtues which religious people benefit from. In fact, from the night of Qadr onwards, the religious people who engage in fasting begin a new year. During the night of Qadr, their fate for the whole year is recorded by the divine angels who record our actions. During the night of Qadr, one enters a new year, a new stage, and in fact, a new life and birth. From this night onwards, one begins to take a path with his provisions of piety.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
I read you
a motto to promote not just reciting the Holy Quran regularly, but also reading and understanding its verses with the aim of using its detailed guidance and implementing its teachings in every aspect of our lives. This is the motto of the 30th Tehran International Quran Exhibition that is currently underway in the Iranian capital and will be running until April 15th. Paintings depicting verses and teachings of the Holy Quran, as well as calligraphy and illumination artworks, are on display at this annual exhibition, which is held every year in Tehran during the holy month of Ramadan. Artists from 21 countries are here to present their works and hold workshops. Some rare manuscripts and books related to the Holy Quran, including interpretations of the Holy Book, are also showcased. Publishers from several countries have brought their newly printed copies of the Holy Quran as well.
Most of our works are related to lessons from the Holy Quran by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. This year, we managed to publish his simplified version of the translation of the Holy Quran, an easy-to-read and understand copy, which is an excellent choice for anyone who wants to understand the Holy Quran.
Tehran's International Quran Exhibition is the most significant exhibition of its kind in the Muslim world. World-renowned Quran reciters usually participate, and recently it has also gained a reputation for offering the latest version of Quran AI apps and electronic devices, including Quran reading pens.
We have very special customers, and our products appeal to a wide range of people. We usually receive a lot of orders from Muslim countries, including Persian Gulf littoral states. Our main product is this electronic reading pen that can recite verses of the Holy Quran. It comes with a memory stick and can hear recitations from more than a dozen of the world's best reciters.
As always, the exhibition will be hosting several Quranic competitions. Researchers and university professors have also been invited to talk about the Holy Quran and its teachings.
This is the 30th year that the Islamic Republic is hosting this annual Quran exhibition or conference. There are many things going on as we speak. As you probably have reported, we have families in Tehran and from some other cities coming and visiting. We have people that produce software, Quranic software. We have people who produce books on Quran. We have children books, different activities that are presented annually here.
A series of international webinars have also been scheduled to discuss the latest studies on the Holy Quran and related topics, accessible to all of those who cannot attend.
The 30th International Quran Exhibition opened on April the 1st with the aim of promoting the Holy Quran and Quranic teachings. Yusuf Mishahmadi, Tehran.
Political leaders, scholars, and people from all walks of life assembled in the Iranian embassy in Pakistan's capital Islamabad to condemn Israel's aggressions on the holy Al-Aqsa Mosque. While addressing the ceremony, Iran's ambassador in Pakistan, Sayyid Muhammad Ali Husseini, called upon the international community to make greater efforts to stop Israel from creating conditions that hinder the achievement of freedom from the clutches of Israel.
Some Islamic states have come under pressure to normalize their relations with the greedy and occupied regime of Israel. That is why Israel is targeting the Palestinian people bluntly. So this is the time for Muslims to turn their hearts for their integrated attention to Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque by stopping Israel from their non-stop aggression against innocent people of Palestine.
Political leaders and members of Pakistan's parliament said that Israeli forces' aggression against innocent worshippers in Aqsa Mosque is a clear and flagrant breach of international laws and violates the rights of the Palestinian people.
The issue of Palestine is the most important issue in the Islamic world.
Pakistan is determined to continue its support for the Palestinian people and their resistance against the occupation of Israeli regime.
The religious scholars stressed upon the Islamic countries to play their role for the freedom of Palestine, saying the illegal and unjust Israeli actions would further aggravate the tense situation and undermine the prospect of peace in the region.
The issue of normalization of relations with the Zionist regime and the compromising approach of some Islamic countries in the region has led to the formation of a new phase of resistance in the Islamic countries. It's time for the Muslim states to end their political and diplomatic ties with Israel and stand united for the Palestinian cause.
While condemning the crimes of the Zionist regime in the occupied territories, prominent personalities from Iran and Pakistan say that both countries are united in supporting the resistance of Palestinian people and will continue opposition to the Zionist regime.
The participants called on the Islamic nations to break ranks and get united to stop indiscriminate attacks on Muslims in Palestine. They asked the Muslim states to boost peace and stability in the Islamic world. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Tons of humanitarian assistance sent by Iran have arrived at the gateway of Al Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus. The aid was delivered to a Syria-based Palestinian faction in the presence of Iran's ambassador to Damascus, who reiterated Tehran's unwavering support for the Palestinians and their cause.
Iran was and will continue supporting the Palestinian cause and Palestinian factions' resistance. We condemn the recent Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip and Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's time for those who claim to defend human rights to open their eyes and see the crimes committed by the Zionist regime.
The convoy carries 4,000 food parcels. The aid will be distributed among the needy Palestinians in the refugee camps in Syria. Heads of Palestinian factions emphasized the importance of Iran's historic support for Palestinians' steadfastness, vowing to stay adherent to resistance until their land is freed.
What is happening today is a continuation of Iran's policy of standing by the oppressed people, particularly the Palestinian people, who are subjected to the ugliest barbaric fascist aggression at the hands of Israeli gangs. Iran provides assistance to Palestinians in refugee camps and in Gaza to help them to remain steadfast and triumph over the enemy. Such assistance is a symbolic issue that shows that Iran believes in the necessity of backing the Palestinian people until victory is achieved.
Before the onset of the Syrian crisis, Palestinians used to live a normal life until terrorists took over Al Yarmouk refugee camp in Damascus, the largest of its kind in the region. As a result, tens of thousands of refugees were displaced and scattered across the Arab country with increasing humanitarian needs. Iran continues to stand by Palestinians on both the military and humanitarian levels. The Islamic Republic has been supporting the legitimate rights of Palestinians to fight against the Israeli occupation. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
A new quarterly report by ENEA, the National Agency for New Technologies, Energy and Sustainable Economic Development, has found that electricity and gas prices skyrocketed in Italy last year. According to the research agency, the average price of electricity rose by 100%, while the price of gas increased by nearly 60% over the previous year. Most analysts have been blaming this rise solely on the war in Ukraine. However, some energy market experts and an increasing number of people from the general public have come to different conclusions over the past months.
The spike in energy prices started before the war in Ukraine. It was driven by reduced gas imports from Russia, which later aggravated. EU member countries were then being forced to get their energy supplies from other sources at much higher costs.
It was just big-time speculation on energy markets. The emergency, the war in Ukraine, they were just pretexts. I think most people have realized that.
The ENEA report on soaring energy prices also points out that high prices are not only badly impacting households, but remain a serious threat to the competitiveness of the Italian and European industry. When the government was formed last October, Prime Minister Meloni vowed that her administration would combat speculation and unjustified increases in the cost of energy. 6 months later, the Italians are still struggling with high energy prices and the consequent soaring cost of living.
So far, the Meloni government has put forward roughly the same measures adopted by the previous executive to counter rising energy costs. The government's latest initiative, which I'm afraid will bring little results, features obliging petrol stations to display the average national price of fuel alongside the prices that they charge to avoid speculation. It should not be forgotten that Meloni has also scrapped a 400 million euro windfall tax on energy giants.
The cost of energy has tripled. Last month, our bill was 181 euros for a three-member family in a two-story flat. Are they crazy?
In Italy, gas accounts for more than half of residential energy consumption. Rome covers more than two-thirds of its energy needs by imports. Max Civili, Rome.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have spent a tense night as the Israeli regime's aircraft targeted multiple sites along the besieged Gaza Strip. The attacks came after Israeli military claimed that rockets had been fired from the Gaza Strip. The Israeli aircraft allegedly targeted military sites of the resistance group Hamas in various parts of the Gaza Strip. This is Israeli attacks focused on agricultural lands and residential areas across the Gaza Strip. No injuries were reported.
We were asleep and woke up to prepare the meal of Suhoor. I don't know what happened. More than five Israeli rockets destroyed the neighborhood. My house, in which I have been living for less than a year, has been destroyed and my car as well.
The Palestinian resistance fired barrages of rockets from several areas in the Gaza Strip, setting off sirens in the cities adjacent to the coastal enclave. The resistance retaliation comes in the aftermath of Israeli savage aggression against the Palestinian worshippers inside Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied city of Al-Quds.
First, they fired a warning rocket and within 5 minutes launched another five rockets on a residential and industrial area. This house is home to a family of nine people who were asleep.
Israel has a deplorable record of unlawful attacks on Gaza, killing and injuring civilians, including women and children. Israeli army committed war crimes and crimes against humanity in hundreds of cases. They destroyed residential structures and internally displaced thousands of Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And this as Washington and international organizations have only whitewashed the crimes of the Tel Aviv's illegitimate entity.
The Israeli occupation forces committed a crime. The Israeli warplanes launched massive air raids at dawn to the rising civilians, including women and children. The resistance responded to the Israeli crimes in Al-Quds, and this premeditated crime overnight.
There are fears of further violence in the coming hours as the Israeli drones are hovering over the sky of the Gaza City.
As long as the Israeli occupation forces continue to violate the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the situation will remain tense. This round of clashes will probably end in truce, but the Israeli measures and practices in the coming days of Ramadan will define the situation.
Tensions have been high in the Palestinian territories, especially in the occupied East Al-Quds, Gaza Strip and the West Bank for months. And international mediation to de-escalate the situation bore no tangible results as Israeli aggressions and annexation of the Palestinian territories continued. It is still unclear if the situation in the Gaza Strip would escalate. The Palestinian resistance, however, reaffirmed that they are ready to respond to any future Israeli aggression. Ulal Asi, Press Gaza.
On World Health Day, experts describe the health situation in Afghanistan as critical. Dr. Sadiq says the worsening condition has affected patients, especially those with rare diseases. adding, the situation is further aggravated by multiple factors.
The health situation of the patients who come to us is critical, especially for thalassemia and hemophilia patients. Poverty and the politicization of the aid from international bodies and organizations is the main contributors to the worsening condition. Previously, aid contributions were made widely, but now they are rare and we face a lack of medicines. This trend has the potential to turn into a human catastrophe if it continues.
The harsh health situation in Afghanistan affects patients with special diseases way more. Patients who have congenital conditions that are too complex to control and impossible to cure. Abdulaziz, who has hemophilia, tells us more about his condition and his problems.
I have hemophilia, a disease in which when you bleed, it won't stop unless you have the medicine for it, which is factor 8 and 9.